defining moments. Defining moments. What is a defining moment? It's a pivotal experience, fundamentally changing a person, a perception, behavior, the course of life, a turning point that makes a lasting impact. A turning, defining moment is a moment experience that reshapes a person's understanding of themselves or the world around them. A defining moment in life, an occasion where my path has undeniably, it has changed. Defining moment, it's a significant feeling that there's a shift or change happening. A defining moment is a pivotal experience, a planned or unplanned event that has changed everything. A key moment for life and everyone in here this morning, the day that we're born, but the day that we find out why. A negative, a positive feeling, defining moments. How many of us experienced a defining moment in a negative way or in a positive way? In the Bible, there's 3,200 roughly people mentioned, 3,200 people mentioned in the Bible having defining moments, good and bad. On our planet today, I don't know if you know, but we have cracked the 8 billion mark. There's over 8 billion people on Earth today. 57% of people each month search for meaning and purpose on the internet, in the bookstore. 57% of people searching purpose, meaning. 68% of Americans say finding their deeper purpose, it's a major priority in life. 95% of people say they struggle to find the exact purpose in their life. 10% of people say they know what they want, what their purpose is, and only 5% say that they can follow that on a regular basis. Crazy. Do you know 90% of people in our planet have a really hard time making a goal and sticking to it? 10% of people, they do their best, but only 5% can stick to the goals and the dreams that they know they have been given. A defining moment, knowing the day that we're born and understanding, why am I born? Why am I here? Why did God create you? Why did God put you here on the earth? What is the purpose and the calling that God knitted you, knitted me, knitted us? He put us together. God, knowing from the beginning all the way to the end of the earth, knowing one day everything that we see is going to vanish. But while we are here, what's my purpose? What am I here for? Is it just to get a job? Is it just to have a family? Is it just to make a lot of money? What is the reason why God put each one of us on this beautiful planet? And we could say even in our wonderful community of Hemet, California, right? Hemet is heaven, as many have said before. Why has God put us here? Why has God have me here today? With that, we're going to go to Luke chapter 19. We're going to start in verse 1. Luke 19. Starting in verse 1, says, Jesus entered Jericho and made his way through the town. There was a man there named Zacchaeus, who was the chief tax collector in the region, and he had become very rich. He tried to get a look at Jesus, but he was too short to see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree beside the road, for Jesus was going to pass that way. Verse 5, when Jesus came by, he looked up at Zacchaeus and called him by name. Zacchaeus, he said, quick, come down. I must be a guest in your home today. Zacchaeus quickly climbed down and took Jesus to his house in great excitement and joy. But the people were displeased. He's gone to be the guest of a notorious sinner, they grumbled. Verse 8. Meanwhile, Zacchaeus stood before the Lord and said, I will give half my wealth to the poor. If I've cheated people on their taxes, I will give them back four times as much. And Jesus responded, today salvation has come to this house, for the man has shown himself to be a true son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and save those who are lost. And so this morning, as we start to look at this text and kind of get a picture of the interaction and the defining moment for Zacchaeus, you know, a chief tax collector, is a person, is a man who leases a region from the Romans, the right to collect taxes. A chief tax collector leases a region, towns from the Romans for the right to collect taxes. A chief tax collector, he's in charge over many tax collectors who are below him, and then he gets to collect commission. Woo-hoo-hoo. Turn to your neighbor and say, commission. That sounds fun. He collects commission from the tax collectors who are under them. So every chief tax collector was rich. Why? Because they earned their living taking advantage of other people. People hated, most people don't usually like tax collectors. People hated tax collectors, but those they hated the most were the chief tax collectors. You know, as a tax collector in this day, I think life can get a little blurry. Your job is to oversee. Your job is to collect. Your job should be not to overcharge, but just do the job that's given to you. But at some time, many people, as this guy did, as many of us do, sometimes life gets a little blurry, and sometimes we start thinking right, wrong. There just becomes a little blurry, becomes a little hazy. The way we do our jobs, the way we do our life. Many people think at their jobs it's okay. Hey, they've got 20 stacks of copy paper. They're not going to miss one. Life's a little blurry. I can just take that home. Many people in sales, being a mechanic, the job's on and on and on. I could charge $500, but why? Why be the cheapest guy? Let's charge $1,000, right? That extra $500 would be nice. Many people have taken jobs, occupation, and situations in life where things we allow to become blurry. We allow between right and wrong the vision to become hazy, and it's, what if I tell a little white lie here? It's just a little blurry. What if I just don't exactly say the truth over here? Things become a little blurry. For this chief tax collector, and as many people in our world today, the job becoming so important. We know that in the Old Testament, God called and made this thing called the Ten Commandments. Have we heard of the Ten Commandments? Ten Commandments, a list of kind of rules, regulations, things to live by. One of them was, don't make an idol, and any kind of idol in front of me. But for many, and even as this guy in the story, a job, the J-O-B, can become an idol to where it becomes the most important part of life. My job is everything. It's who I am. For many, the job, the title, the pay, it is absolutely everything in life. There are men, there are women, and all they do, they spend their life being devoted to their job. It's how I get paid. It's how I pay the bills. It's how I drive my BMW. I don't have one, but people who drive, you know, BMWs. My job is the way that everything happens. For many, they spend their life devoted to this word called the J-O-B. And they don't realize sometimes that being so devoted, life becomes so blurry that they neglect everything else that's important in life. Sometimes working hard for that buck, and a buck hardly gets you anything anymore. How many of us know that a dollar used to go a long way, but now, man, it's like not even, you can't even crawl. You don't even take a step. Dollar just doesn't get you anywhere. So many people so devoted to a job. There are young people who go to school. They go to high school, and they are, I can't wait for a job. I can't wait to make money. There are people who allow that motivation to get a paycheck, it blurs the vision of life because job, having money, having success, having my own way. Sometimes we as adults, how many of us remember when we were younger, which wasn't that long ago, and hearing our parents tell us, you need a job, you need to work. One day you're going to have to pay bills, you're going to have a house, you're going to learn how to pay all this stuff. Do any of us remember? I'll never forget this one young guy that Kim and I knew. A week after he graduated, his dad came to him and said, listen, get off your butt. You're getting a job. Well, I just graduated. Can I enjoy the summer? No, you're going to work right now. And this young man got a job, went to work, and then bought a car, bought a motorcycle, and got so strapped for cash because he just started buying stuff. Trying to do what daddy said, got to work, got to get a job, need to buy things. Many people get so sucked into a story, whether given by a parent, a family member, a friend, you must work, 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 work. Yes, we should work, right? Working's not a bad thing. But for some people, we don't realize sometimes that what was passed down to us, the reason for working, is blurred. It's wrong. I worked for a sales company, and when I first started, man, the upper management, they made you feel like you, if you don't bleed for this company, we're going to take you out. Don't ever say anything bad. Don't say anything negative. You belong to us. You belong to the company. It wasn't something that was spoken, but everyone was terrified. Everyone, oh my gosh, I have to love and adore and worship the company I work for, or else. If my boss wants to call me 9 o'clock at night when I should be spending time with my wife and kids, I got to pick up the phone. So one day, I went to a training class in Utah. So they sent us from here up to Utah. And one of the teachers was a man who his topic for that day was called The Bed of Roses. And he told us a story how he, just like me and everyone else who worked for a great sales company, spent every day feeling that my life belongs to this company and nobody else. I must work and perform or else. And so he worked so hard that he neglected his wife and his spouse. And she used to ask him all the time, hey, why don't we just take a break, go smell some roses. She liked roses. She loved roses. And would ask him all the time, hey, stop, take a break. Let's go smell some roses. And he always said no. No, 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 no. Another day, another time. Till one day she got cancer and passed away quickly. Happened very fast. And he realized, and he said something that changed my world. He goes, you know what? I don't like the company I work for anymore. I don't. I can say I almost hate it. It's just a job to me now. We don't realize sometimes what we do with our jobs, how we allow it to elevate and become so important to us. Why we think we need to work. Why we think we need to provide. That sometimes a job becomes an idol. And when a job becomes an idol, what's going to happen? How many of us seen in the Old Testament when the Jewish people started building idols? Yes, they built statues in the old day of idols. To us today, we don't build, well, we do kind of build statues still. Our cars and our houses and those things. But anyway, that's a different topic. This morning we're just talking about jobs becoming an idol, because for this man in this story who was a chief tax collector, his job was so important to him, and it was so important to him that at some point life became blurry, that he thought it was okay to become a thief and steal money, hard-earned money from other people that did not belong to him. And sometimes us, at the same way, in the same token, when a job becomes more important than what it really should be, yes, a job is important. Yes, we should provide for our families, but it should not be elevated to the point that it dictates every single thing that you do in life. A job is just a job, right? A job is just a job. And how we do our job and how we respond and how we look at it is extremely important. And so this paints the picture of Zacchaeus. How many of us know that, you know, in a workplace, even in life, how many of us know there's pressure? Have you ever felt pressure in your job? Have you ever felt pressure to perform? Have you ever felt pressure? I have to. So for me, in my sales job, I have to hit certain numbers every single week and every single certain month, or I don't get anything extra. I have to live on a salary, but if I do hit these quotas and I surpass them, then I can get a bonus. And how many of us know it's hard to live sometimes on just what you get? Getting a nice bonus does help. Gives a little cushion, right? Many of us feel the pressure at jobs and have felt pressure at jobs, whether it's our boss asking us to do something, whether it's us being given a task, something different than we've never done before, the pressure that happens at a job level. But you know, there's more kinds of pressure than just at the job level. There's social pressure. And how many of us have seen, and maybe social pressure is one of the largest pressures in our world today. And you can kind of even It's been said before, peer pressure. Do you know there's peer pressure and then there's indirect peer pressure? But there is pressure. There's academic peer pressure. There's regular peer pressure. We know social. We know job-related, family pressure. There's so many different pressures we face as a people. And if you take a look and you're thinking about Zacchaeus this morning, or texting our stories about, here's a man who felt the pressure of a job, the pressure of being a boss, the pressure of having to go and collect. And sometimes when we do things, I work really hard, so I should collect a little extra today. I should take a little rob over here and steal from a little over here because I'm working so hard, so I just should do this, this, and this. The pressure sometimes that we allow to consume many of us, positive and a negative way, the social pressure. How many of us have seen Instagram, Twitter, all those lovely social media networks that people spend their life on? How much pressure is there when you're looking on social media? How much pressure is there, you know, how about playing video games? How much pressure is there playing video games to win the darn game? I gotta win. I gotta win. You know, what's funny is we as sometimes adults can look down on kids and say, get off that darn thing. But we allow ourselves to get pressured into things we shouldn't do. And yet we always got to take it out on the younger folk, right? Turn to the younger folk and say, I'm going to take it out on you today. Why not? Because it's the fun thing to do. I can't tell you how many times I've heard adults say to young people, get a job. Yes, it's important. Get off those video games. Yes, it's important. Get a life. Sorry. The family pressure. The adult pressure. How many of you were told by mom or dad, you need to get a job today or you're out of the house? Anybody ever hear that? I'm sure we know somebody who has, right? So let's move past the job thing. Social pressure today, what people do socially, is one of the greatest damaging things in our country and our world. The social pressure for where you live, what you drive, what you wear, what you do every single day, this social pressure. This is who you should be. This is what you should be like. The social pressure in high school, the kids. You know, when I was in high school a few years back, it hasn't changed much. The pressure, to be honest with you this morning, is, you know, let's party, let's have a little fun, let's do a little of these, let's do a little of those. The social pressure to be liked and to be around other kids and to have lots of friends and do things that you shouldn't do on the weekends, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The social pressure in high school, it hasn't changed for our high school kids this morning. There is a social pressure on them, a peer pressure. This is who you are. This is what you should be like. This is what you should do. But it's no different for us adults, let's be honest, because there are so many pressures that we face every single day. And one of the greatest ones, and we mention it all the time, is the word fear. How do we know there's such a pressure? I don't know if you realize it, but see, there's this world operating system. There are large groups of people around the world, and their weapon, it's not a gun. It's not a machine gun. It's not a handgun. Their weapon is fear. And so every single day, you know what they do? They try to drive fear into every heart in this world because they know if they can get you afraid, they can control your life. What's going to happen tomorrow? What's going to happen when the next president comes in? What's going to happen when the next governor comes in? What's going to happen? All these thoughts that dominate so many people, when at the end of the day, you know what it does? It takes away from Christians who should know, my God's in charge. I should not be afraid. He's going to continue to lead me and guide me by the streams, by the green grass, hallelujah, for a picnic. And there's going to be times where he's going to lead me through the valley. But I don't have to be afraid of what happens next because my God's in charge. But what's their greatest weapon? It is fear. The fear pressure that people use every single day to get people so distracted and so afraid. We're like, sometimes people, when they use this word fear, it disrupts the whole entire world and it affects how we shop at grocery stores. How many things have we seen that people have put on us, this is going to happen next, and people run out by all the toilet paper and water, and you know what? Nothing happened. How many people have stored up their sheds with beans and rice and Jesus Christ, right? And what happened? Nothing happened. Why is fear a pressure? It's a tactic that we allow to affect how many. And the thing is with us this morning, sometimes people, you know, we can see, there are people who walk down the street and we go, man, they are so full of sin. It ain't funny. You can smell the sin coming off that person, right? But you know, in the Old Testament and in the Bible, fear to God, he used fear. And when hearts became afraid, there was consequences and harsh consequences to being afraid and not trusting him. Sometimes we think, if I have fear, it's okay. It's normal. But you know, I like to point out what everyone else is doing wrong in the world. Fear is just as bad. The pressure that we all face in different ways and different things in our career, in our family, in the financial status, in the academic world, the pressure. How do you deal with pressure this morning? Zacchaeus was a man who dealt with pressure, and he caved under pressure and became a thief. Many people become thieves because we don't realize sometimes we think it's okay to steal a little here and steal a little there. It's okay. It's all right to steal. Some call it a five-finger discount. Got five fingers, I'm just going to grab it and take it and put it in my pocket and keep on going. Being a thief is wrong. But many people, without realizing it, you know what they do? It's not so much taking the things in other people's possessions that happen today. The pressure of taking the joy out of someone else's moment for the day is even worse today. The pressure that people put on themselves, and when they connect and interact with another individual, another human, if you listen how people put each other down so easily. Why you do this? Why you do that? What are you doing? How many of us listen to names after names after names and pressure after pressure? The cyber pressure, the peer pressure, the direct to indirect pressure that is around us. And when instead of giving it to God, many people, you know what they do? They just hurt somebody else. Sad. The pressure that we allow. How I look. How do I fit in? Look at me. Look at me. How many of us know social media? Look at me. So happy. So free. Woo! Doing cartwheels. I'm so rich. I'm so happy. Look at the image that I'm portraying. All of it being false. The image. You know, we see and we know at the end days that the Antichrist, the spirit of the Antichrist is anti-Jesus. The spirit of the Antichrist is anti-Jesus. And as we get into the rest of the text we're going to hear in a minute, you understand that everything, and you're going to hear everything that Jesus is. The spirit of the Antichrist is definitely alive and living well today because there's so many anti-Jesus things that even us Christians do without realizing it every single day. The story for our fella here today, he had a problem. He was too short. Now, if you love basketball and you want to become an NBA player but you're short, that could be a little challenging. There are people who want to become professional singers but they suck. Right? That can be a little challenging. There are people who want to become professional football players. The percentages of people who actually make it to something at a professional level is so tiny. And why is it so small? Because a lot of times we allow what we think, this is my issue, so I won't be able to do what I need or dream to do. How many people go after their dreams? 10%. How many people go after their goals? 10%. What happens with the other 90% of the people? We're so focused on the reason why I can't do what I'm supposed to do. For Zacchaeus, he was too short. He wanted to see Jesus. Here's a man, we knew that he was full of pressure, he was rich, he was a thief. You know, he had so many people that he could bark orders to, and they had to do every single thing that he said. But this man, for some reason, he wanted to see Jesus. But his issue was too short. He couldn't see over people. Can you imagine not being able to see over people? Now, some of us, there are people we've stood next to, and it's like, good Lord, what happened to you? Did they stretch you out on a stretcher, and that's how you got so tall, right? I used to say as a kid, because I'm not the tallest in the bunch, doesn't matter. The harder I hit you, you're going to fall the same, right? We all got those sayings, but anyway. The man in this story, being short could have became the excuse. I want to see Jesus. I know I need to see Jesus. But I can't see him because I'm too short. Moses, I don't know if you've ever heard that name before. God called him to be one of the greatest leaders in that time. And what was his excuse? I don't talk well. Well, how are you supposed to be a leader and lead people if you don't talk well? How are you supposed to be a leader over 1 million people? Just going to use your hands and point all day? Moses, he didn't feel within himself that he could talk very well. He wasn't very eloquent with his words. He wasn't, the verbiage there, he wasn't very quick on his feet, quick on his toes. That could have became the reason, the excuse. Say, God, no, you gotta get somebody else. For Zacchaeus, it was his height. For Moses, it was the way that he talked. And this morning, every one of us have said no to God for one reason or another. Too short, I'm too tall. I've got too many mistakes. I'm hiding some sins that I don't want anyone to see. Many people, there's a reason that I'm going to stop right here, God, and I'm not going to continue to pursue you. Zacchaeus wanted to see Jesus. And for many, this is where they walk away. He tried to see, but he couldn't because there was a lot of tall people that day. They bust him in, and they were all tall people. They're all 7 foot. Who knows? We don't know how tall they were, right? That's where many stop. Jesus came to give us a rich, full, satisfying life, and many begin to taste it. But when it becomes tough as a believer, when it becomes hard, and we're like saying, God wants to bless me, but he wants me to do this, I'm short, so I can't go on. I can't talk well, so I might as well give up. I'm not seeing the success that I see in other people having. They have more likes. They have more this. I might as well do this. Might as well stop. Many people in Zacchaeus' position and in our position just say, you know what? I can't see him. I'm just not going to go on. And they give up. How many people in our world give up? Well, roughly 95%. 95% of the people in our world today give up on dreams and goals. What God has called us all to do. Even getting a glimpse of Jesus, even getting a glimpse of his goodness. How many of us, I quoted earlier Psalms 23 where we talked about God leads us through goodness. But what does it also say that he leads us through? Through the valley where it's dark. It's scary. That's why we like scary movies. Let's be honest. How many of us like scary movies so we can get frightened out of our minds? And it reminds us and helps us to forget sometimes when life is tough and rough. Every single individual on this planet knows they want God. They need God. But for some reason, many people give up and they stop pursuing, whether it's guilt, shame, sin, fear, insecurity. I can't. I won't. It's not my time. God, I'll catch you on the next bus. I'm too busy, you're too busy, God. We'll catch up next time. We'll catch up next time. As Jesus saw Zacchaeus because he didn't give up, turn around and say, I hope you don't give up. Hope you don't give up. Hope you don't give up. When Jesus sees Zacchaeus being a short man, what did he do instead of giving up and going back home and counting the millions of dollars that he had and making himself feel better. See, I don't know if we've ever done that. When we know we're supposed to do what we're supposed to do and then we give up, you know what we go back? We go back to our comfort place and say, for him it was his cash. He had lots of cash. He can sit there like Mr. Krabs and count all the cash, and he felt so good about himself. And so he felt so good and better about himself because his money was his everything. His money was his everything. So I'm trying to get God, I can't see over there. I'm just going to go, he would have gone home and he would have played with his money. Because money was everything. He would have counted it. He would have held on to it. Shoulda, coulda, woulda, right? What do we do the exact same thing when we know we're supposed to do what God's called us and made us to do, what he's put us on this fine earth to do, to follow our purpose and our calling with all of our heart, to open our mouths, to share the gospel and the good news? Jesus said, I want you to make disciples of all the nations. I want you to go and baptize them in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. God has put us all, if we're sons and daughters, if we're put on this earth for one thing, Jesus lined it out. To make disciples and to share the good news, to take care, to love those who can't love themselves, to take care of the needy and the less fortunate. Zacchaeus didn't give up and he didn't go back to his comfortable place. What did he do? He climbed a tree. I'm going to get myself in a position where there's no way someone's going to miss me. If Jesus is walking by, he's going to see me because I'm going to put my life in the position to be seen by God. I'm going to put myself out there. I'm going to climb a tree. I could get splinters. I could get dirty. Because how many of us know nobody likes doing the dirty work or the dirty jobs? I'm going to put myself out there. So that God sees me when he walks by. What if we do like Zacchaeus to make sure my life is in the position to be seen and heard? God knows what I'm doing. God sees my effort. He sees that I'm being persistent. He sees that I'm trying hard. He sees that I'm giving everything that I have. If we were to think about a job again for a second, how many of us know that workplaces, bosses, when they see employees working with 50% of their energy, 50% of an attitude that's just not the best, how do they view that person? And then they look at another one who's given 110%. It's different when you see someone, what? Giving their all. Are we giving our all to see and to find God and to be on the path that he created for every one of us this morning? Zacchaeus put himself in the position to be seen. And as soon as he climbs up that tree, Jesus sees him. What does he do? He calls him by name. He never met Zacchaeus before. He didn't have people whispering in his ear with a little microphone. This is Zacchaeus. Remember, he's got a bad leg. You're going to pray for him. He didn't have anyone giving him the clues. Jesus being God and using his divine power, he looked up the tree and he said, Zacchaeus, I'm coming to your house today. Jesus knew his name, displaying his divine authority and power. You know, Psalms 139:1 says, God, you've examined my heart and you know everything about me. You know when I sit down, when I stand up. You know my thoughts even when I'm far away. You see me when I travel, when I rest at home. You know everything I do. You know what I'm going to say even before I say it. Jeremiah 1:5, I knew you before I formed you in your mother's womb. I knew you before I formed you. Psalms 139:16. You saw me before I was born. Every day of my life was recorded in your book. Every moment was laid out before a single day had passed. God, how precious are your thoughts about me, oh God, because they can't be numbered. Zacchaeus was known by Jesus before he knew Jesus. Jesus already knew who he was. God this morning, that's one of the coolest things about God. God knows us. And you know what the weird thing is? How many of us know that in a house sometimes, how many of us know that we can have a good day and we can have a bad day? That in home sometimes we could get a little cranky at times and maybe we can say something that we shouldn't have said. And so sometimes in homes and families, it requires more love and forgiveness. Because sometimes you're seen in your house differently than you're seen anywhere else. Sometimes we're seen in our houses different than anywhere else. And how many of us know that sometimes, how about, let's say even at a church, if we're supposed to be a church family, right? Sometimes, you know, that's what scares people at church sometimes, when they start to get close to people, and then we start seeing junk in their trunk, and the next thing you know, they disappear. Oh man, I got to jump to another church. They saw my skeletons in the closet. They saw the bones of the person I killed. It's time to move on. Sometimes at churches, people keep jumping because as people start to see what's going on and we see in each other weaknesses and faults, we see grouchy days and bad days. What is it required in our home? If you ever have a bad day and you bark and yell at someone, it takes love and forgiveness. What does it take in church to operate as a church family? It takes love and forgiveness. To know that sometimes people fall down and I got to be the one to pick them up. I'm going to give them the hand and I'm going to pick them up. Jesus, when seeing Zacchaeus, he knew him. And when did he know Zacchaeus? Before he was born. He saw that little baby. He saw in his head the hair, the eye color, what Zacchaeus would grow up, what he would do with his life. Jesus saw everything. He saw his life story. And he looked up in the tree and said, Jesus said, Zacchaeus, I'm coming to your house today. God knew him as God knows you. He knows every thought. He knows every fear. He knows every insecurity. He knows every concern. He knows if you have a lot of hair, if you have a little hair, because he knows every one of your hairs. They're all numbered, and he's got it down. He's got the exact number of every one of our hairs on our heads. God knows what you're concerned about, the things that you want. He knows the desires of your heart this morning. He knows what you're longing for. He knows what you're desperate for. As God knew Zacchaeus, God knows you. And he says, before you're born, I knew you. I know you now. I knew you then. I know you now. And I know what you're going to do next. I know everything about you. And no matter how many bad days you have, God says, I still love you. As Jesus made the statement, he's going to go to Zacchaeus' house, he did what he constantly did, and he started to hear the murmur, 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 murmur. It says that people were displeased. They were displeased and they were disappointed in Jesus. Why? Because he was going to hang out of the chief tax collector, a thief, a robber. Murmur, murmur, murmur. What do people like to do when they see people doing things differently? They start to what? Murmur, 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 murmur. When people do things differently, when people maybe sometimes, let's look at it this way. How many of us, when we were younger, we were taught how to do something from our folks, from our parents, and we're like, well, can I try it this way instead? No, my way or else. Well, this way could be a little easier. We're not going to do it easy. It needs to be hard. Because that's how we were taught. And how many of you ever were in a moment where you were told to do something, it's like, I'm going to get the job done, but do you think I could do it my way? I'm going to get it done, but can I do it my way? Could be a little easier and quicker. Well, I don't want it to be easy and quick for you. I want it to be hard and tough. No offense, but in the old days, kids were forced to walk in the snow 10 miles to get to school. And so what did they do? Those kids told their kids, nope, you're going to have to learn the hard way too. As we become Christians, as we become servants of God, sometimes God gives us a way to do it a little differently. And that bothers other Christians. Jesus came to the planet and he was different than everybody. This was God himself and he was different. Because you know what he did? He didn't hang out at the temple every day. He hung out with the people. And he didn't hang out with just any people. He hanged out with those that were just gross to society. Tax collectors of all people. Sinners. People who are at the bottom of the barrel. Everywhere Jesus and every decision that he made, he caused the murmur, murmur, murmur in other religious people. Because they didn't like the way Jesus did things. Grumbling, displeased by how Jesus lived his life and how Jesus chose to love all the time, 24/7. What did Jesus choose? Love. When we get angry and frustrated, do all of us choose love? Let's be honest. When something doesn't go our way, do we choose love in the moment, or we choose choice select words that are like daggers, ready to come out? Jesus chose love 24/7, no matter who he was talking to. Because you know why? Jesus, at the end of our text today, Luke 19:10, he says, I came to seek and to save those who were lost. Many of us have heard the parable of the lost sheep. It says Jesus would leave 99 to go find the one. It's not that he didn't care about the 99. He just really cares about those who get lost and can't find their way. How many of us this morning, if we were to take a step back, how many of us know people who still maybe haven't found their way yet? Well, if we know, if you just ask Google, how many people haven't found their purpose and call in life? Man, it's over 90%. If Google is correct, and sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't, right? There's over 90% of the people in the population who can't find their way. Why? Maybe it's because they haven't found God. Jesus' life mission and purpose was to connect heaven and earth and become the bridge between heaven and earth. And so he gave himself. Jesus gave himself as God. He gave himself to be the bridge between heaven and earth, bringing the lost so they could become found. Even those who are gross and disgusting, even chief tax collectors. Jesus broke through walls. He broke through religion and pressure and money and greed and sin. Jesus broke through every single thing that he could so that he could show love and bring the lost to be found. As Jesus displayed all that he did in this moment, what does Zacchaeus say? He said, you know what? I need to make it right. In this day and age, when Zacchaeus was here on the earth, if you got into an accident and you damaged someone's goods, you would have to pay them back the value of the good that you damaged plus 20%. So if you got an accident in Zacchaeus' day and you damaged someone's buggy, their car, their house, their pottery that was outside, you would have to pay the value of that good plus 20%. But if you were caught stealing, you would have to pay 4 to 5 times the amount of what you stole. So Zacchaeus, what did he say? Jesus, he stops. He says, I'm going to give back 4 times the amount. What was he admitting? I have been a thief. I wasn't accidentally overcharging. I was purposely overcharging. Jesus, I admit that I'm a thief. And I'm asking for forgiveness, and I will pay it back. Zacchaeus humbled himself. What does God say about the humble? They see and inherit the what? The earth. It's not the proud. It's not the strong. It's not the courageous. It's not the wealthy who are going to inherit the earth. Who did Jesus say inherits the earth? The humble will inherit the earth, because it's only the humble that admit when they're weak. We've been taught you have to be strong at all times, 24/7. You must act strong, look strong. You gotta show your pride and show your color and show your this and show your that. We have to at all times be ready to be strong. And if anybody ever sees you weak, man, you better change it quick. Apostle Paul, we don't know what kind of issue he had. He said he prayed constantly, God, take this issue and weakness from me. God said, nah. Why would I take this from you? It's in your weakness that I can be made what? Strong. But why is it we don't like to admit where we're weak? Why is it we don't want to humble ourselves? Zacchaeus in this story and in our text this morning, to make it right, he said, God, I'm a thief. I'm a thief. But I'm going to pay back everyone 4 times the amount. Jesus, I give my life to you. His idol, his job, money became his passion, and he didn't care how he got it, when he got it. It was everything to him. Even if he had to steal to get more money, what did he do? He stole. He said, God, forgive me. I've had so many idols, money, power, success. God, my job, forgive me. I'm going to give it all away because I found what's really important. You. I found you. And so this morning as we have a Zacchaeus moment, turn to your neighbor and say, here you're having a Zacchaeus moment. I think Zacchaeus in this moment, he asked himself, who am I allowing to drive the car of my life? Am I driving or am I being driven by someone or something? Am I driving or am I being driven by social pressure, by financial pressure, by fearful pressure? Am I driving or am I being driven by something else? Is there greed? Is there lust? Is there pleasure? Pressure from friends, dreams, jobs. I need attention. The image that I live for. Am I being trapped into living and doing it the right way? Or do I live my life with honesty and integrity? Or do I live with honesty and integrity? At the sound of and the sight of Jesus, we see Zacchaeus did, I think, four things. He humbled himself. He was persistent. He didn't give up. And then he became a giver. Humble, persistent, didn't give up, and he became a giver. Four things. This is a defining moment for Zacchaeus. He humbled himself. He wouldn't give up. He was very persistent in what he wanted, and he became a giver. Matthew 5:5, God blesses those who are humble, for they inherit the whole earth. How do you get the whole earth? Be a humble person. I don't need to always be right. I don't need to just portray pride and strength everywhere I go. I could admit I'm weak in this area. I'm afraid of this, afraid to lose a job, afraid to lose work, afraid to lose money. It's okay to admit when we're afraid. If we don't admit that we're afraid, we're going to allow that fear to continue to get bottled up and become bigger than what it is. Matthew 6:21, Jesus said, where your treasure is, the desires of your heart will be also. Your eye, it's like a lamp. It provides light for your body. When your eye is healthy, your whole body is filled with light. But when your eye is unhealthy, your body becomes darkness. And if we pause and just listen to what Jesus said there, where your treasure is, that's where the desire of your heart will be also. What is the treasure? How many of us for a long time, I want to go find buried treasure? I'm a Goonie fan. They found treasure and they saved their family. How many of us have ever wanted to go, I'm going to go find that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. I'm going to go find treasure. I'm going to go save this. I'm going to go do that. What we truly, honestly treasure and seek for, it shows what the desires of our heart is. And Jesus said, what you watch either provides light or darkness for your soul. Many of us, we do look at our phones, we do watch TV, we do talk to our friends, and either we're allowing light or we're allowing darkness by what we see to come in. Jesus said, where your treasure is, there your heart will be as well. And so this morning we're going to wrap up, and we're going to wrap up with a closing story. Defining moment last week, a woman at the well. Today, a defining moment in the life of Zacchaeus. And then today we're going to end with a defining conversation that Jesus and Peter had. It is Matthew 16, starting at verse 13. When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked the disciples, who do people say the Son of Man is? Well, they replied, some say John the Baptist, some say Elijah, others say Jeremiah, or one of the other prophets. Then he asked them, but who do you say that I am? Verse 16, Peter answered, well, you're the Messiah, the Son of the living God. Jesus replied, yes, you're blessed, Simon, son of John, because my Father in heaven has revealed this to you. You didn't learn this from any human being. It was revealed to you from God. But I say to you that you're Peter, which means rock. Upon this rock, I'm going to build my church, and all the powers of hell will not conquer it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you forbid on earth will be forbidden in heaven. Whatever you permit on earth will be permitted in heaven. Then he sternly warned the disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Messiah. Verse 21. From then on, Jesus began to tell his disciples plainly, it was necessary for him to go to Jerusalem, that he would suffer many terrible things at the hands of the elders, the leading priests, the teachers of religious law. He would be killed, but on the third day, he'd be raised from the dead. Peter took him aside, and he began to reprimand him, saying such things. Heaven forbid, Lord, he said. This will never happen to you. Jesus, verse 23, he turned to Peter and said, get away from me, Satan. You're a dangerous trap to me. You're seeing things merely from a human point of view and not from God's. And so this morning, as we wrap up our defining moment in Zacchaeus' life, this morning, as we wrap up a defining conversation between Peter and Jesus, Peter, you look at the story and the conversation, in one half, he's on top of the world. He said, man, God revealed this to you, Peter. Your name's Peter, which means rock. We're going to build the church. Keys of the kingdom, they belong to you. How good was Peter feeling at that point? He's looking around at the other 11 guys. He's like, that's right. How good was Peter feeling? And then Jesus says, he goes on to tell him what the plan was and what's coming up. Death, beating, crucifixion. So Peter, I have to think, he's still feeling really good about himself. No, Jesus. No. He steps in because he's thinking he can dictate now and tell Jesus, no. No, that's not how it works. And what did Jesus say? Get behind me, Satan. Because you're seeing things from whose perspective? Yours. You're not seeing it from above. You're seeing it from the earth. You're seeing it from your point of view, but you're not seeing it from my point of view. Was Peter going to stop Jesus from dying on the cross? Heck no. Why do many of us in our conversations in our lives try to stop the work that God has put us here to do? Just like Peter. No, Jesus, you can't do the cross. Why are we so afraid to suffer and get our pride hurt? Peter was talking to Jesus, and he thought, I just don't want to see Jesus get hurt, right? None of us want to see our friends get hurt. We don't want to see our friends or family get hurt. But sometimes it's got to go through the fire so you get to the other side. Sometimes you got to go through a beating till you get to the other side. Sometimes you got to walk through the valley of the death before you get to the other side. Sometimes you got to be made fun of before you get to the other side. Maybe you need to get backstabbed a little bit before you get to the other side. Maybe, I hate to say it, but maybe God needs to humble us a little bit so we can get to the other side. Peter in the conversation had a defining moment because he's called the rock of the church and then he's called the devil. He goes from the rock to the devil. And it wasn't like one of the other boys called him that. I mean, who cares if John the Apostle called him that, right? Who cares if it's one of the other guys, Andrew, Bartholomew, who cares? They call me the devil. They call me that all the time. This was the Son of God. In one breath, he called Peter the rock of the church, and here's the keys to the kingdom. And a few minutes later, he called him the devil. And get behind me. What happened, and where was the shift? Defining moments. These are key moments in life where something shifts. There was something that shifted. Why? Because in one second, it said Peter had a revelation from above, and Jesus said, you had a revelation. It wasn't from anybody. It came from above. And then what did Peter do? He got into himself because he started feeling good. The next comment he made, it came from himself. And he got out of the mode. He got out of the spirit. And so it was seeing things from his perspective. And he missed it all the way. When are we in life going to miss it? It's when it's just my perspective. God said his ways are what? Higher than my ways. What did God say? Come to me and I'll show you things. Unimaginable, crazy, amazing. Jesus at one point said, you know what? The flesh, it doesn't profit you a thing. It's in him. One of my favorite verses of all times, and I love to say it over and over and over and over and over again. Jesus said, "The thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy, but I've come to give life and life to the fullest." We're in a theme called defining moments. What's a defining moment? It is a key moment in life where there's a massive shift or change. Last week, we talked about a woman at the well who she had the sin of adultery. She had five husbands, and she was living with somebody who wasn't her husband. Jesus pointed out her sin, and you know what happened? From that moment on, she changed, and she became a preacher, and she went to the whole town and invited people to receive Jesus. In 1 minute, when her sin was behind her, and she could forget about it and not feel bad about it anymore, and she realized it's forgiven, it's gone, then she did what she was put here to do, and she brought and led people to Jesus. She had a defining moment. In our text today, there was a man named Zacchaeus. What was he? He was a thief, and he robbed people of money. Many of us today, we rob people of money, time, love, joy, peace. God hasn't put us here to be a thief. He's called us to build each other up. God hasn't put us here to tear people down. He's called us to encourage and to build each other up. If someone tore you down, I'm sorry, but it's not your job to go tear somebody else down. Build each other up. That's what he's put us here to do. And lastly, our defining conversation that we end with, what did Jesus reply to Peter at the end after calling him the devil? He says, if you want to be my follower, give up your own way. Take up your cross, follow me. Hang on. If you try to hang on to your life, you're going to lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake, you'll save it. And what do you benefit if you gain the whole world but lose your soul? Is anything worth more than your whole soul? The Son of Man will come with his angels in the glory of the Father and judge all the people according to their deeds. And I tell you the truth, some standing here will not die before they see the coming and the kingdom. And so this morning, as we wrap up with our last closing conversation, heaven and earth collide in one conversation. Heaven and earth collide in one conversation. Peter has a defining moment where it changes. And Jesus describes to him, I've come here to show you the way. You know, from a very young age, how many of us, and I know it doesn't go back too far, but how many of us can ever remember the first time we felt like doing something we shouldn't? How many of us can ever remember that first time when we hit our sister and it felt so nice just to smack him one, right? How many of us can remember the first time we lied to our parents and maybe we stole something from mom and dad? How many of us can remember the first time that we did something that we knew we weren't supposed to do? There's a voice. There's a sound that's leading the direction that leads to life, that leads to blessing, that leads to hope, that leads to peace. It leads to all things that God has for you. But then there's another voice. And I don't know if you heard it today. That voice says, live and do whatever you want that makes you happy. Do whatever you want to do if it makes you happy. Be whoever you want to be. If you're an apple today, be an apple. If you want to be an orange tomorrow, be an orange. Whatever makes you happy. But you know what? Many people in the pursuit of happiness, you know what they did? They lost their way. And then they hurt everybody else in their circle because it was just their happiness that they wanted. The devil this morning, I don't know if you realize, remember, the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy. Many don't realize when Satan is lying to you, to me. We don't realize when he lies so loud and so clear. But it must be right. It sounds right. It sounds right. This sounds right. If I do this, I'm going to get this. This has to be right. And how many of us have ever made a decision, didn't turn out the way that we thought it was going to turn out? And why? It's because we listened to the wrong voice. There's a voice this morning that's leading and guiding you. God has a purpose and a plan, and you can't find it anywhere else. No matter what school, no matter what people you know, no matter if you have lots of money, if you come from a big family, little family, it does not matter the past. It doesn't matter who you belong to. It's who you listen to right now. Heaven and earth can collide, and let it be a defining moment for you, like the woman at the well, like Zacchaeus, and like Peter, if we listen to the right voice. God's purpose, he wants to give you a rich and satisfying life. Who doesn't want that? He said, it's easy. If you want to follow me, take up your cross, deny yourself, and follow me, and I'll show you the way. Does that sound right? Come on. Take up your cross? What did the devil say to Jesus? If you just bow down and worship me, Jesus, you don't have to go to that little cross thingy. You don't have to suffer. What did Peter say to Jesus? I don't want you to suffer. But maybe it's the suffering that God's trying to teach us as a lesson. How many of us wanted to run from COVID? How many of us want to run from death? How many of us want to run from situations? Well, God's saying, maybe it's a little bit of the suffering I'm trying to use as a lesson. Let God be your voice, because on the other side, what is it? It's the blessing and the happiness and the peace you're looking for. Let's pray.